All right, greetings everyone. Good to see you all here. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's Thursday, July 4th, 2024. We're delighted to have you with us for our first Thursday of the month, meditation. And there's an old Sanskrit word, satsang, which means gathering of those who are seeking for truth, the truth seekers. Truth finders. And so we'll go ahead and get started. Yes, thanks. I just got a note from Kathy about the link to the interview we did with Matt Bennett. I know I really like him. He's a great guy from, I think it's Rochester, Minnesota, somewhere like that. The longest we go is about an hour, and it's dedicated really to not so much into diving into all the political issues, but more into the spiritual dimension of our life on earth and how we can raise our consciousness and our vibration and our awareness to most meaningfully contribute to a positive transformation in our society and in our own lives. The underlying idea, I think it's great, you know, if people like Leonard Tolstoy and others have all said this kind of the same thing. Everybody wants to change the world, but nobody wants to change themselves. And I think my life would be so great if everybody else was just better, you know. So the underlying idea, of course, is that the world, in many ways, you know, the world really is a mirror. And I'm always tickled when I remember my old Tibetan Lama who would point that out from time to time. You know, one of the five wisdoms in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition is the great mirror wisdom. And the idea, there's two different ways of looking at that, but one way to look at it is that the world is always a mirror, that whatever psychological shortcomings and delusions and so forth that are still existing in my consciousness, guarantee they will find a mirror in the outer world. Someone will reflect that back, and I usually don't like it. So the whole idea is to understand that, and that's a great thing. It's really fantastic, because that's why we're on this earth, is to help get these things mirrored back to us so that we can, instead of trying to change the other people around us, work on ourselves. And the story, some of you may have heard this, because I've told it a few times, but there was this person in our Sangha, in the Tibetan Buddhist community I was in San Francisco. This was way back in the 1970s. But, like many people, but she would seem to be sort of unusually kind of critical of other people. And we were having dinner one evening, and she started talking about somebody. And then the Lama said, you know, if you look in the mirror, and you see some dirt on the face that's in the mirror, and you try to take off the dirt by cleaning that mirror, he said, it's not going to work. The dirt is actually on your own face. And you know, we usually try to clean it in the mirror, and which is understandable because it's easier to see it out there. But the whole idea, and that's what we talk about really in the World Peace Diet and the new book Food for Freedom, is that everything that we see in the outer world is a manifestation of our consciousness. So to create a more peaceful, healthy, free, enlightened outer world, it really starts with ourselves. And from that foundation, then we can perhaps build a movement. And so many people are activists, you know, we're activists, we want to make a better world, and so we're always strategizing how we can market some kind of a better world to other people, change other people. And of course, that makes us feel good because we're right and they're wrong, and we can change them. And if we could only change them, then everything would be great. So, again, the whole idea is to turn the light of the mind inward, back toward ourselves. So let's go ahead and what we like to do usually is have a short meditation in the beginning, and then I'm happy to respond to any questions or issues you may have, or other people can respond. We can have a conversation. It's really your time. But we're home, you know, half the year we're here at home in the summer, and half the year in the winter we're on the road somewhere. And so for this half of the year we have the piano. So I'm sitting here. If I had another camera, you could see, I don't know if you can see it, maybe. Here it is. Can you see it? I don't know if that's working, but anyway, there's a piano here. And so here we go. We'll just have a meditation together. All right, so let's begin our time of meditation together by taking a minute and allowing ourselves to relax into this present moment, this beautiful moment. Giving thanks for every human being in our life, whoever they are, all of our friends and family members, our colleagues, our acquaintances, those who are in our hearts, perhaps because we resonate with their teachings in books or on videos. And through this huge web of relations, we connect with the whole human family. The 8 billion of us here, and all the human beings who have gone before us and helped to create the wisdom and the traditions, the institutions within which we are embedded and functioning, and all future generations, knowing that we are like all human beings and all living beings, a manifestation of infinite and eternal consciousness. We give thanks for this life that lives through all of us. Great wisdom and creative power, the source of all life. And we give thanks also especially for all of the beings that we refer to as animals, the magnificent infinitely varied celebration of life through all of the insects and all of the land living animals, the burrowing animals, the running animals, the flying animals in the air, all the swimming animals in the waters. One life living through all of us, all of our relations. We give thanks for the infinite web of life here, all the beings that we share this earth with, and all the beings of other dimensions, all of our teachers, all of the teachings of wisdom of all the traditions, And we give thanks also for the unique and beautiful being that we are. Far beyond the limited self that we identify with, the being who is aware. And we see that looking out of the eyes of all living beings. So let's just connect with our breathing, feeling our connection with the earth and all that the earth represents, the infinite nurturing power that supports all life on this earth and beyond in the universe, and feeling our connection also with heaven, the infinite sky, infinite freedom. The freedom of being. The freedom that resolves all the issues of independence and interdependence. There is one life. And we give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth that we can dedicate being a force for healing and liberation, kindness and love for other expressions of life. And we give thanks for the seed within our consciousness of enlightened awareness. That seed is being fed by our aspiration to awaken, to shine the light that we are for the benefit of all living beings. So together now we just radiate into the infinite web of relations, the feeling of loving kindness is now filling our heart. May all beings be happy and free. May all beings realize their true nature, radiating loving kindness and benevolence in all dimensions, being a beacon, radiating light, the light of loving kindness with every exhalation into the infinite web of relations. Breathing and radiating compassion, the great loving kindness and compassion. May all beings be free from suffering, and may we act to help relieve the suffering of others. Breathing and radiating the light of compassion for all living beings, we exclude no one. And now with every exhalation, we radiate the light of joy. The great joy that is our true nature, abiding always in the very center of our being. The joy that's completely free from outer worldly conditions. Our true nature is joy, and we radiate this joy now into the lives of all living beings. May all beings be aware and savor the beauty of creation, the precious opportunity of a lifetime. Breathing and radiating joy. And finally, we abide in our heart, radiating peace and harmony to all living beings equally. Seeing our whole earth now bathed in the light of peace, knowing that beyond the outer appearances, there is always the great peace of being. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in our meditation this evening. Really appreciate your efforts during these challenging times to remember. I think that's really what it boils down to in many ways, remembering our purpose, remembering why we came to the earth for this incarnation, and then teaming up with like-minded people to do the best we can to raise awareness about the most important things, whatever we feel is the most important things. And so this is the 4th of July, which symbolizes, I think, the yearning within all of us for freedom. And freedom, of course, is one of those words that has two meanings, more than two meanings probably, but two obvious meanings. One is a very high meaning, sovereignty, the capacity to be, what's the best word, to be free of limitations or delusions. But it's not the negative side of freedom, I guess, is the word, I guess, is license. Basically, this idea that I'm free to do whatever I want, no matter how it affects others. That kind of freedom, sort of to like corporations, in a sense, you have the freedom to to pass on their costs to externalize costs, basically, to pass them on to others. So the whole idea is that there's no freedom without responsibility. And as we take responsibility for our life and for the quality of our consciousness and our health and our relationships, then we begin to discover what freedom is. And it's a high calling to actually live a free life, because it means really thinking of others and also fulfilling one's own highest destiny. So it's great. It's great to be alive and to have this opportunity and to find like-minded people. I think that's so precious. So thank you, everyone. And so I see a hand raised. Please go ahead. I think
you're, Dr.
Danny, yes?
Hi. I'm having like a day of increased sensitivity, and I seem to be wrestling with, as a vegan, like killing plants, you know, eating plants and suffering, plant suffering, and
right.
Not have. So can you speak to that a little bit from your perspective?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good question. It's a big, huge question that sometimes it can be twisted around in lots of different ways. But the basic thing, I think, of course, is that as people on a spiritual path or just human beings who are conscious, we are aware that when we live our lives, we can cause suffering to others. So the whole idea with veganism and the whole idea, really, I think, with spirituality is understanding that we're interconnected and then taking responsibility for the suffering we're causing others, to try to minimize that. So it's clear, I think, with beings who have a central nervous system, they're endowed with the capacity to feel pain, especially other vertebrates, right? I mean, but then I think also, I would say, any animal at all. They're mobile, they can move around, and especially insects, I think also. So we try not to harm them, to kill them, or to cause them suffering and pain. It's sometimes we do, either inadvertently or because we're working on something and it's unavoidable, but we try to minimize that. And with plants, I think it's the same thing, essentially. We are. It's not so obvious that they are capable of suffering. They're not mobile, so they don't have something analogous to a central nervous system with pain receptors. Nevertheless, my feeling is that there is the capacity for them to respond to what's happening to them. And so, like, we have a food forest here where we live. We've planted about 75 fruit trees and nut trees and a lot of other, you know, annuals, you know, cucumbers and tomatoes and things and squashes. And so we're always out there. And that's something we deal with. And I think, my feeling is that if we're living as best we can, vegan and veganic, in our garden, we don't use any bone meal or blood meal or manure. We don't use any animal inputs. So we're trying to make all our trees and plants happy. You know, we want them happy. And so we're loving them as best we can. And we find, quite honestly, it feels like anyway, the more we really pay attention to them and love them and tune into them, the more they love us back. You know, they give us, it seems like, you know, more fruits come, and, you know, it's this kind of win-win situation. And that doesn't mean that we don't have to sometimes pull plants out, pull weeds out and things. We try to minimize that by using lots of mulch and so they don't grow in the first place. But feeling that I think that we have as human beings is, and it's reflected, I think, really in the religious traditions, is that animals and humans, you know, are sentient beings. Plants are not classified as sentient, but on the other hand, we don't go around, you know, taking an axe and killing a tree without needing to or something. You know, the whole idea is to try to honor their lives. And I've had the experience, I have to say, it was an interesting experience. My old Zen teacher, way back, a long time ago, mentioned that he had done a 72-hour walk when he was a young man, and that it had been a very powerful experience for him spiritually. And so finally I thought, all right, I'm going to try that. So I was living in a little house in Oakland, California, and I started walking for 72 hours in the backyard of this house around a big plum tree. And it was interesting because, you know, the first day and maybe day and a half, it was a very difficult thing to do. It was like, you know, after walking 12 hours without stopping, I still had 60 more hours to go. You know, it was like, I realized that was really hard to do, to just keep walking for 72 hours, 3 days and three nights. But by the second night, that tree I was walking around came alive to me. I mean, I could see it was alive. And not like biologists say it was alive. It was alive, like a beings are alive. You know, that's the feeling I had. It was this sort of presence that seemed to have a life of its own. And I realized later, you know, that, you know, I, like everyone in our society, we've been sort of numbed to the life around us. We're taught not to see and appreciate the life of plants or animals or even of each other. And we're very utilitarian. We look at a forest in terms of board feet of lumber. You know, how can we do that? We're taught, you know, this is the underlying idea. We're eating animals. We're cutting down, forests and so forth. So I think it really is important to honor plants as much as we can. And that's why, you know, eating a whole food, organic, plant-based diet is the best way to live in terms of minimizing any suffering to plants, and I think also increasing our cooperation with plants and the love that we can have for plants. I remember meeting this fellow on Maui, and he said he grew his own food, and especially he had a breadfruit tree that he had planted, and he said, half of my body is that breadfruit tree, because he would eat from that tree every day, and it would give fruit instead of just 6 months of the year. It gave fruit like 10 or 11 months of the year, so by some miracle, you know. And so I really remember that very clearly, this idea that he just loved that tree so much, and the more he loved that tree, the more that tree loved him. I think it's the same thing for us, you know, that we can do agriculture in a loving way. We can actually, you know, so I think the whole idea really, from my point of view, is to try to get back to a less centralized way of living. So we're more growing our own food, and as individuals and as communities and neighborhoods and so forth. And as we do that, we reestablish our connection with the earth and with the land and with the plants and the animals. And then we're not these sort of outside forces that just harm plants unnecessarily and harm animals unnecessarily. So I think it's a whole process of reconnecting with plants. But I think the underlying idea is that when we're being respectful to nature, to ecosystems, to animals and plants, it boomerangs back to us as health and happiness and harmony. And when we're just using and dominating and exploiting, it comes back as different kinds of conflict and disease that we experience, because that's what we're sowing. We're sowing those seeds. So with all that being said, I do want to say that, you know, there's some people are eating animal foods, and they'll say things like, well, you know, I'm eating a bacon, but when you have a tomato, then that tomato is screaming just like the pig is screaming. It's no different, you know, something like that. And I think we know that that's not the same, you know. And I say that sometimes, because I think it's good to just, you know, if someone said that, like, well, you know, if they go to court because they stabbed their neighbor's dog or something, and if they said to the judge, well, you know, to me, stabbing a dog and stabbing a tomato is the same thing, then that wouldn't be just jail. It would probably be an institution for the criminally insane. You know, it's definitely not the same to stab a living animal as it is to stab an apple tree or an apple or something like that. We know that. So I think it's good to have a healthy respect for plants and to do the best we can to minimize suffering for them. You know, and I think my feeling is they love being in our life, you know. So, and you know, they make these beautiful, sweet fruits. They're brightly colored to attract our eyes, and they taste good, and they have all the nutrients we need to thrive and live and celebrate our lives. I mean, it's really fantastic. I mean, it's set up. It's like, it's called the clue, you know. It's like, these are foods that are for us to eat. They don't run away. They don't, you know, they're right there. They're giving themselves. So I think there's so many of those that we can cultivate, and we enter into a caregiving relationship with them. So it can bring out the best in us, I think. That's my feeling, because, you know, we learn to be caring. So I think the whole idea is to try to do plant agriculture the way it used to be done in the early days. You know, plant agriculture was more women's work probably, but both men and women, but it was more about just celebrating the abundance of life. And now we do plant agriculture more or less the way we do animal agriculture, which is using a lot of pesticide, herbicide, fungicide. It's kind of a war, you know, against nature, and that's what we see. I mean, a war against forests, a war against prairies and ecosystems, because we're trying to maximize our return, and we see it as a commodity. So, again, it's all about respect and not seeing beings as commodities, either animals or plants. So how that actually plays out in daily life, you know, we all have our unique, you know, situation. Some people have gardens. Some people are just buying food at the store. But I really recommend to everyone, if possible, to try to build some relationship with some trees, for example. You know, go out and be with trees, plant trees. It's a wonderful thing to plant trees and share the fruits with people and see them as living beings. And like what we do, we feed them all the time. Madeline's always going around with these watering cans that have microorganisms. It's called EM, effective microorganisms, and potash, and, you know, different, you know, nitrogen, of course. And we recycle it. We call it our amber, you know, which is our urine, but it all goes back to the plants, you know, all the nitrogen, all the information. So they know us, right? They know us really well. So I think it's really good to be loving, you know, just be loving to plants, be loving to animals. And the more we do that, and getting away from the centralized approach to a decentralized, so get to know the plants, or get to know the farmers at the local farmers markets who have the plants. You know, try to work on that decentralized kind of approach. Hopefully that was helpful to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks. Anyone else have...
Yes, Will. This is Patricia. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
Hi,
everybody. Yeah, it's really been on my mind now, the divisiveness, and kind of based on what you talked about at the beginning, which was, I think, essentially to try to not judge. And without getting political, but just the divisiveness of who you support regarding Gaza and Israel, and then especially after the debate, the extreme divisiveness regarding the upcoming elections. And I just find that, how can I say it? I feel like I can't even talk about it. Even with those close to me, just have such adamant feelings about either of those. And I think they are both extremely, extremely important. And I know they're outer, right? But they're there, and they're weighing very heavy, I think, on most of us. So maybe you can just speak to that, how to kind of reconcile, if that's possible. It's almost like an anguish, I feel.
Right. You know, I had a little hard time hearing at the very beginning. What are the two things? Can you say it again?
The divisiveness regarding Gaza and Israel and the upcoming elections that people feel so adamantly either way. And it's causing me a lot of anguish. I just, so many people around me, we see things really, really differently. And even though can you hear me, Will?
Yeah, I got it now. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right. There's these issues that are very divisive, like you're saying. And I think as caring people, we naturally want to, if we see a genocide, right, we want to, like, stop it, you know, stop killing people. And then, of course, the elections, that's basically these colliding worldviews of based on power, politics, and a lot of deception and media manipulation, and I think a lot of misunderstanding, really, about the way, you know, the way the country is run. I mean, you know, we could get into the whole question of, does it even matter who is elected president when you have empire managers that are actually running it anyway? They put up a little face, like pretending that they're, you know, like this election makes any difference. But I think, you know, we're in a situation in many ways, it's a reflection, from my point of view, of animal agriculture, you know, the whole underlying problem. And that's why I wrote the book Food for Freedom, you know, that we will never solve these problems in the outer world of war, disease, injustice, deception, as long as we are warring against animals and deceiving ourselves about what we're doing to them. And you know, that's millions of beings every day we're slaughtering in much worse ways than any war that we ever do against humans, and we're eating it and we're causing it, and virtually everyone is participating in it, you know. So all of these things you're talking about are outpicturings in many ways of this underlying shadow that we ignore and then it just runs us, you know, it just pushes us into greater and greater violence and divisiveness. And I think, you know, it's a time to really awaken out of the trance of animal agriculture, because now that we have nuclear weapons and we have surveillance systems and we have media companies that can control the narratives and control what everybody's view of the world. We don't know what's happening in Gaza, right? I haven't been there and walked around and watched. All I have to rely on is media, right? And the same thing with Ukraine, or the same thing with anything, really. And so we're in a situation where the technology has gotten so large and powerful, and we, in many ways, are not that large and powerful as the technology is, and who controls the technology can control the world. And when you have a situation like I talk about this in my new book, where basically 1/10,000 of 1% of the human beings on this earth control the narrative, and control the banks and the governments and the universities and the media and Hollywood and they control everything. So the only way that situation can be maintained, because mammals in general and humans also don't tolerate unfairness, right? Such an unfair system where a tiny minority has all the money and has all the power. The only way that can be maintained is through massive deception and narrative control and divide and conquer. It's all about divide and conquer. So our job, I think, is to be savvy enough to realize this, maybe not take the bait of the deception and the divisiveness, to cultivate love for everyone and see what's happening. Just realize that we need to stop exploiting animals, stop seeing nature as something to be exploited, and heal our relationships right where we are, and then realize that we're being lied to about virtually everything. We are being lied to. We don't really know, but I think the divide and conquer tactic only works when we're afraid, you know, when we're afraid of each other. And So I think it's good to speak our truth, but don't think that we can necessarily change other people. It's really hard to do that. People, we've all been so conditioned and programmed. And one of the things I've realized is that the farther we go through the educational system, in many ways, the more conditioned and in many ways, the more we've lost touch with our inner wisdom. So the educational system is really, in many ways, about having us just believe authorities and trust authorities. And that's a huge mistake now. And it always has been, but now science has been completely captured, as well as the government, as well as the media. So we have to trust our intuition. You know, that's really it. And then just remember, we're only on this earth for a few short decades, and we're in a situation with 10,000 years of momentum that is churning a lot of violence and misunderstanding and divisiveness. That's, you know, it's not our fault, right? We're born into this situation, and how do we respond to that? That's really the thing. Each one of us has the fantastic opportunity to choose how we respond. Well, what do we do? Do we fight? Do we do we try to cover our heads and ignore it? And that's the thing. So that's why I admire all of you that are on this call. You're doing your best to be a force for healing, and going, you know, liberating animals and trying to understand what's actually going on beyond just the official narratives, which are deception. Everything is deception. And it's more than we can even imagine. And I'm not even sure, you know, it's to try to just see what's true in our local communities and support that and try to create as much sanity in the local communities. I think ultimately that's where our power is. It's locally. And the big world picture that's being channeled into us through the computer screen and the television set and so forth, it's good to be kind of aware of that and just realize that there's a lot of deception, a lot of fear porn, a lot of misinformation, really, about everything. And again, that's why I wrote the book Food for Freedom. You know, I don't have time to go into it now, but just question all those things. So I think that's the underlying situation we're in. It's basically to see that these divisive the extreme divisiveness in our society is being it's being created. I mean, it's not natural in a sense. I mean, for example, the CIA has, for the last 50 or 60 years, developed and become expert in going into countries all over the world, finding the fracture points within those societies, whether it's race or religion or men and women or gay, straight, whatever it is, finding the fracture points and just hammering on those to divide the society so they can then put in the leader that they want to have in so they can control that country for the benefit of the financial interests. And that's what's happening. Is my voice still working? I hope it is. So I think we have to understand that we are being deliberately deceived on a massive scale, and that the underlying drive, really, of that 0.001%, you know, the 8,000 people, is to enslave humanity. I mean, we have to be very clear about that. It's not that they're bad people. It's just, you know, like most people are not bad people. They just like a good steak. You know, they look at cows like livestock. You know, they just appear to be used. So, you know, there's people that look at humanity the same way, and it's about culling the herd. You know, they want to depopulate, get rid of human beings. There's too many. And then the ones that are left to control and enslave those. So if we don't question it, that probably will happen. So it's actually, there is a certain urgency to it, I think, that, you know, we should really not allow our freedom of speech and of gathering and of religion and of bodily autonomy and all these things to be compromised, because that once you lose them, it's hard to get them back. And question the official narratives. I guess that's it. You know, there's there's a lot more to it. But you know that old saying, you know who rules you by those who you are not allowed to criticize, right? So just be aware of that too. That's a good question. That's a great question, though. Thanks, Patricia. And it looks like we have a few more minutes. If anyone else has anything else they would like to discuss or contribute, if you want, anyone wants to say anything more about what I was just saying, that's fine as well. You know, ultimately, I keep coming back to this idea that it's how we respond to the situations. You know, I love this metaphor that came to me the other, again, a couple of weeks ago. I think I've already said it once or twice, that the earth is like a gym. You know, you come into a gym and you expect to have some heavy weights. You know, I mean, you don't want to have only 2-pound weights. So there's a lot of weights here, heavy weights. I mean, there's a lot of, we have a lot to deal with coming here. We've all been wounded, and to heal our wounds and then to help heal the wounds of the world, it's a huge amount of work to do. And the other thing I wanted to mention too, since nobody has their hand up right now, if this isn't anything else, is the underlying idea that I mentioned another time, but it keeps coming back to me, the practice of cultivating positive qualities. I think that's really something that we don't think enough about, and I'm working on it all the time. I should work on it more. But there's that basic idea, like in the Christian tradition, of the 7 deadly sins and the 7 heavenly virtues. And the interesting thing is, you know, some of those, like we just had June, which is Pride Month, and I wrote an article about this, that all 7 of the deadly sins, which are, let me see if I can remember them, pride and greed and envy and, I'm going to forget them, pride, greed, and lust, and anger and sloth. Anyway, they're all 7 of them are encouraged and celebrated in our society. I mean, all 7 are, yeah, envy. Yeah, all 7 of these are promoted really strongly all the time. Like we should be, especially sloth and lust. I mean, you know, we're encouraged to look at other beings as objects to be used for our own pleasure, our own benefit. And we love science because it makes our life easier. And we're always encouraged to consume more and to envy what others have and try to have that too, and even more than they do. And, you know, the whole advertising in general, this whole thing. But one of them, you know, the last one, I think it is sloth. The opposite of sloth is diligence. That and so we think of the heavenly virtues like charity and chastity and humility and patience and gratitude and diligence. These really just raise our awareness to the point where we're not going to be easily controlled by institutions in our society. See, the reason that the 7 deadly sins are so promoted, and what Patricia was saying earlier about the divisiveness, it's like I'm righteous anger. You know, I can have righteous anger against those Democrats or against those Republicans or against the Trump or against Biden or against whoever it is we should have righteous anger and hatred for. you know, this idea that, you know, that we can cultivate that. And so, but the underlying idea, I think, with the seven heavenly virtues is that we have the capacity to cultivate positive qualities in our consciousness. And when we do that, we that's a path of freedom. Because when we vibrate at a higher level, that's what these seven heavenly virtues do. They just bring us to a higher level where I'm no longer triggered. I no longer look at something and lust after it or envy have it or feel proud about something or get angry about something. I can see, I can have understanding and love, and I'm self-contained. I don't need something outside me to make me happy, you know, all these things. So when we cultivate these qualities, it brings us into freedom because we're no longer easily controllable. That's why, in many ways, there's such an attack, I think, on religion right now. There's a huge attack on religion in general, an attack on veganism, too. Veganism is being divided on a massive scale. I mean, that's a whole other subject, but attacked. But I think because veganism and religion, you know, they're the same thing, spirituality, raise our awareness where we're thinking of others and we're at peace within ourselves and we're living a life of integrity. And I think of all those seven positive qualities, there's one that's the most important of all. And I think, what is that one? What's the most important of all the qualities? This is the one. If you have this one, you have everything. And if you don't have this one, you're never going to get very far on a spiritual path. And that one is the last one, diligence. You know, diligence is everything. If, you know, without diligence, without actually really being willing to do the work, we have nothing but excuses, and we can blame others, and you know it's. But if we do have diligence, there nothing will stop us. We will go all the way to supreme enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Diligence, that's it. And that's the last thing the Buddha said before he passed away. He said, work out your own salvation with diligence. So that's something that no one can lend to anyone else. That's within us. If we have diligence, if we're willing to actually put in the effort and energy to try to improve our consciousness and try to be a force for healing and awakening, nothing can stop us. Anything that tries to stop us, it'll make us stronger. If we don't have diligence, then we fritter our life away, and the next life, and the next life, and the next life, and after maybe 10,000 lifetimes, we finally get to diligence. We say, okay, now I'm going to have some diligence. It might take a few thousand lifetimes, you know. I don't know, but that's what I feel for myself anyway. It's like sooner or later we realize that grasping after worldly things doesn't get us ultimately anywhere. The only true contribution and fulfillment comes from spiritual awakening and being diligent in working with our own consciousness, so that we're not just part of the problem and blaming and shaming and criticizing everybody else, but we're actually taking it, whatever comes, and to improve ourselves, to improve, to make progress, to have a consciousness of making progress and doing the work to do that. That's, to me, that's the one, diligence. It's the real gold in all of this. And if we have that, it'll get us through everything. So, Susan, we have only a few minutes, but yes, please unmute yourself, my good friend.
There. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate what you said, but going back to politics, I want to say that I am in love with Bobby Kennedy. He is very spiritual. He is very spiritual. And can you hear me?
Yeah.
And he's very loving, And he's very thoughtful. And he's so intelligent. And I think he's like a gift from God, just like you are. You know, he is a gift. And it's like he's a prize. He's sitting there offering himself to us. He's giving it all, his all. And then we've got these, you know, two other people that everybody is against, but this guy is right in the middle, and he is so genuine, and it's like this great gift and gem, and people, well, the mainstream media and Facebook and Google, they're censoring him all over the place, so the news, nothing but crazy news that comes out about him. But anyway, I had to say that because I just think it's so beautiful. He's so beautiful. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree in a lot of ways. I think it's kind of a minor miracle. I mean, we've never really had. It's always been these two, you know, a two-party system, which has always been ridiculous. And I think it is pretty remarkable that this person whose father was assassinated, whose uncle was assassinated, and they were both really, most people agree they were light bearers in our society, and that's why they were killed. And that he has had the courage to just say, all right, I'm going to offer myself here. And I have to say, I really admire his courage, and I appreciate your enthusiasm. And you know, ultimately, it's another thing. How do we respond to the fact that this is happening? It's a good question. It's a good thing to think about. Because remember what Gandhi said. Gandhi said, anyone who says that politics is not spiritual does not understand politics or spirituality. So there is something we need to be as savvy as possible about all these different things. All right. Well, much love to everyone, to all of you. Thanks again for joining us and for radiating your love, compassion, joy, and peace into our world, into the infinite web of relations that connect us all. And usually what we like to do at the very end, and Madeline will, I think, is around. She can join us. Oh, here she comes.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. Yeah, we're having a kind of a little bit of a heat wave here. So let's say our prayer that we say we say this every day at noon for the Circle of Compassion. Judy Carmen is with us, and she's our dear friend and colleague, and we have the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. We've had that for, gosh, over a decade. And all around the world, we say this every day at noon. So let's say it together. Here we go. Compassion encircles everywhere. Feel free to unmute. Compassion encircles everywhere. Good. One more time with feeling. Here we go. Compassion, everywhere. Yes. There's no power greater than compassion. Much love to you all. Thanks again, and we look forward to the next time. Much love. Thank you. Happy 4th of July.
Well,
no fireworks, just love. All right, we love you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you. Happy 4th.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.